What's going on, everybody? Episode 15 of Hockey in the Classroom, brought to you by co-host Matt Wally Walsick, and as always, down in Dallas, Tony Ringett. Tony, how are you doing today?
Good, good. I just tried out this Star Wars pop-up bar. Kind of cool little spot. Had a old fashioned called the Death Star.
Oh, were you are you on the dark side over there tonight?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Tony, there were some dark sides and some not so dark sides this past weekend in college hockey. A lot of things happened. I think more on Friday night than Saturday night. I think Saturday we got to our usual flow of what the teams that we expected to win, but a lot of different things kind of happened this past weekend.
Yeah, and we're really starting to get a lot of clarity as far as, you know, who's seated where, you know, what teams are kind of, you know, really needing to pick up their play. And one team that, you know, we're kind of really high on a couple weeks ago, and all of a sudden they find themselves sitting in a really rough spot is Arizona State, a team that, you know, really has to rely on everyone else to I guess, do the work for them now to get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and with a couple of conferences wrapping up this weekend coming up, and then the remainder being the following weekend, I mean, we're down to 1 to 2 weeks here left before we really get into the conference playoffs, where things really start getting tighter, the race, you know, to make the top 16 becomes a lot harder to do to accomplish.
Yeah, and I mean, every conference except for the Hockey East and the NCHC wrap up this weekend.
Okay, so the NCHC and Hockey East will be the only ones playing after this weekend.
Playing regular season games,
yes. Regular season.
Correct.
So we got a lot that's wrapping up, and Tony, before we dive into this, I just wanted to do a little shout out to CHN. I'm going to butcher all the names that I'm going to mention here right out the gate. I'm just, forewarning. But this is a really good piece I read actually before we were recording this from a writer, Joshvina Shah, for CHN. Interesting article about a Michigan hockey player. And I'm going to butcher this name too, but Nick Granovics. Who is actually, talk about a year or two of just a lot of hardships that he's fighting through. I'm not going to get too far much into the article, but it's very well put together, very well written. But basically, Nick, unfortunately, has lost his mom to breast cancer over the last year. She's been fighting it for 10 years. In the article, it mentioned that they gave her 6 months to live. She made it through 10 years. That's incredible. And they kind of, Nick's really playing through a lot this season. It seems like he had a very slow start the first half of the season. I think in the article it mentioned he only played 5 games, was not really doing much on the ice. And really, you know, Michigan wasn't doing much as well as a team. And he has really come along the second half of the season as being one of the front runners for Michigan's big late push this season. So he's playing through a lot right now. So if you get a chance, go check out the article on CHN's website. Really good piece put together about a kid that's fighting a lot, but still fighting and playing the game he loves.
Wow, that reminds me a lot of what Brett Beebe was going through back when we were in college at Western.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's crazy to think, but, you know, you never know what's going behind the scenes because all we're seeing is what's the 200-foot game in between the glasses. So, a lot of these players, you know, you just never realize, you know, what's going on in their personal life.
Absolutely.
But Tony, let's dive in here. As always, we jump straight into the Atlantic Hockey.
Yeah. And in Atlantic Hockey, the top two seeds are all wrapped up. Sacred Heart actually just wrapped up their season, maybe a couple hours, an hour ago or so. They beat AIC tonight. AIC was on an 11 game winning streak before that. However, they did clinch the Atlantic, last Saturday with their 2-0 win over Holy Cross. They'll wrap up the season on Saturday against Army, which that'll be a huge matchup for Army because right now the biggest piece to this conference is that battle for third and fourth spot. Army and or excuse me, Army and RIT are locked in at 3 and 4. It's just kind of figuring out who's going to get into that that 3 spot and who's going to get into that 4 spot. Right now, RIT holds everything in their hands right now. They've played one less game than Army. RIT will play 2 games this weekend. Well, Army's got the 1 game against AIC. So Army needs to hope they get a win, and RIT does not. I did break down some of the tiebreaker scenarios and whatnot, and it does get kind of – it can get into the weeds a little bit, but it basically goes winning percentage head-to-head, then conference win are the 2 main ones that we'll see breaking everything up. RIT, though, however, does hold the tiebreaker over Army if I see everything right, as the 2 teams would finish, if they tied with the same amount of wins, they would have the same record against each other. The only difference is one game RIT beat Army by 2 and Army beat them in the other one by 1. So that's just kind of how that goes. RIT basically holds their own destiny is what I'm trying to get at. So that was a lot for a little there.
Yeah, I think right now you mentioned it's really the top 4. You know, Robert Morse coming in at 5. I mean, I've just been down on Robert Morse's play the second half of the season. They did end up getting a shootout win on Friday against Canisius with a 4-3 over Canisius on Saturday. That was a game that, you know, if you're Robert Morse, you shouldn't have gone to a shootout with Canisius. You know, Canisius is the 10th team in out of 11. And same with, you know, Air Force, who, you know, Tony, I was high on early this season, has really kind of just maintained their level kind of midway of the pack. They were fighting early on for a top 4 spot, but they have kind of just coasted through the 5-6 spot here. And, you know, against hosting last place Mercyhurst, you would have thought this was a team that's walking out with, is it 6 points a weekend for Atlantic Hockey?
Yes.
So, and they walked out with 5 as they ended up going to a shootout Friday as well. They did pick up the shootout. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They went to a 3-on-3 overtime, not a shootout. I stand corrected. They ended up winning the overtime game, and then they did get the 2-1 win over Mercyhurst Saturday. So, you know, like I alluded to earlier in the show, there are a lot of crazy things that happened Friday night in college hockey. The games that I was looking forward to, I was kind of shocked that Army was shut out this Friday against Sacred Heart. Not so much that I was surprised on Sacred Heart doing it, but, you know, just the fact that they were shut out in general, I was a little shocked there. So I'm not shocked that Sacred Heart got the win, though.
No. Sacred Hearts, they're such a good hockey team. And like you said, I do feel that unless the 2 slip up, we're probably going to see AIC Sacred Heart again in a couple weeks for the Atlantic Championship. I do want to point out, though, that battle for 5th place is incredibly important in this conference because it means a bye into the quarterfinals. Okay, you're not going to get a home game, but at least that's a week that you're not going to be able to get upset, which is always a nice thing. Robert Morse, Air Force, and Niagara are all 3 teams that are still in the hunt. Robert Morris and Niagara do play this weekend at Niagara, so that's a big series, and quite frankly, probably one of the biggest series this weekend between that and our Air Force and RIT. Basically, how it pulls down is Robert Morris currently is 5th place. They're up 3 points on Air Force, 5 on Niagara. Robert Morris basically just needs 4 points to clinch 5th place. However, if they wind up tied with Air Force, Air Force would get the tiebreaker. Niagara really needs a lot to happen. They need to earn 5 points minimum and hope Air Force only earns 2, which I guess is possible given who each team's playing.
Yeah, it's in this conference, you know, it's one of those where I don't want to say anything can happen. I think we've been pretty – it's been pretty cut and clear most of the season. The teams that really should be at the top are at the top. Teams that should be at the bottom should be at the bottom. It's that middle of the pack where it's not been like Hockey East by any means. It has not fluctuated as much. We've really kind of seen the same, 3-4 teams, Tony, between 4th and 7th place being RIT, Robert Morris, Air Force, and Niagara. and Bentley, you could throw their name in there too a little bit, but not a lot have, you know, with that group has really gone up and down, you know, mixing matching in the standings here for the conference. But it will be interesting to see how this weekend plays out. You know, I had on my calendar here, Air Force at RIT is the game of the week for me.
Yeah, that one and the Niagara Robert Morris game both have a lot of standings implications. So both good ones to look at. RIT Air Force is definitely a little more intriguing with the two teams.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to take away from AIC versus Army. That's going to be a hell of a game. But really, Army is just trying to maintain where they're at, and AIC is – I mean, AIC really is not really losing anything if they end up losing to Army here, at least not that I can see.
The game doesn't matter for them.
Yeah, so that's why – so, I mean, it's going to be a good game. Because I don't – I mean, Tony, at least I don't think I've ever really seen at least these teams that have kind of locked in their position for the playoffs really bench a lot of different guys. You know, maybe AIC might bunch a couple here, but it's not – I don't think it's really like football where, you know, half the damn roster gets benched, nor does hockey have a roster that's big enough where they can do that. But I still think AIC and Army will be a good game to watch if you get a chance to watch it. But just with the implications, Air Force and RIT is the game why I have it circled for this weekend for this conference.
Yep, same thing.
All right, Tony, that was pretty pretty cut and clear, as we always have it in Atlantic Hockey, and we're going to shift gears here, and we got ECAC action.
Yeah, the ECAC is, I mean, the top two teams have clinched the top two seeds. It's just a matter of who's going to wind up with that top spot between Cornell and Clarkson. I mean, clearly the two top teams in this conference. The two will play on Saturday, which is arguably the top game in all of college hockey this weekend. So I'm really excited to see how that game plays out. But really going into that one, it could be settled before that game even plays, depending how Friday night plays out. Quinnipiac still playing really good hockey. They're currently locked in on that third spot. They sit a point up on Harvard. RPI is going to need to make some noise to get into that top four seeding, though.
Yeah, and this was another conference early, actually, Friday before I got to watch the Western UMD game on CBS Sports Network, where I started noticing I was watching on whatever the app's called, Flow Sports. I was taking a peek at the Harvard-Clarkson game and a couple Big Ten games, and was kind of blown away. Harvard, I think, got off to a pretty quick lead. Clarkson tried to kind of claw back. But Harvard, I think CHN might have classified this as an upset. It's hard for me to really classify it in that matter because Harvard is a good team. But, I mean, Clarkson's played outstanding all year. So, a little shocking, you know, Harvard Friday went out on a 3-0 lead going into the second. Clarkson got one back. Harvard ended up scoring two more. And then Clarkson scored with, like, 90 seconds left. To make it a 5-2 win for Harvard. So I thought that was a pretty big or shocking score for that type of game and Clarkson in general. And then same with RPI Quinnipiac. RPI ended up with a 4-0 shutout over Quinnipiac. I thought that was pretty big for Quinnipiac, who was, you know, trying to fight for and maybe challenge with Clarkson going down, challenge for the number two spot. It would have been tough, but, you know, just – those were the two Friday games I was kind of blown away to see. Those were the scores and the outcomes for two teams that have been playing well majority of the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then RPI and Harvard do play on Friday too. So another big opportunity for RPI.
Yeah. RPI took advantage Friday and they took advantage all last week, and they ended up with a 7-1 win over Princeton, who's the second to last place team. So that was a nice win for them. To bounce back. So RPI really in a nice driver's seat here to really make a run here for the four spot. And so if you're Harvard, you're kind of hoping, and even Quinnipiac, you're hoping that RPI can be slowed down this week, and Harvard luckily can be the voice of reason on Friday. But then, you know, RPI also has Dartmouth on Saturday. So Dartmouth, who's in the middle of the pack, I think that's a win for RPI.
Yeah, it should be, but the nice thing about hockey is the games aren't played on paper, as we saw last week.
Exactly. Now, I will say this, Quinnipiac, I think, has the easiest road here, as they got to face Brown and Union, who are in the bottom four of this conference. So Quinnipiac does have a night, I would say, an easier route to securing their three spot here. And Harvard and RPI will be will have at least their challenges Friday night, as they got to play one another. Harvard gets Union on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, for Quinnipiac, they're sitting in a good spot. They need just a single win this weekend, and they'll have a home game in the quarterfinals. So
yeah, but we do see this time of the year where these teams at the bottom have nothing else to lose and try to just play spoiler for these teams that have more on the line on one side of the bench than the other. So, you know, would I be shocked to see a Union pull out a random win on a Friday night or a Brown? No, but do I expect it? I don't expect it. But, you know, crazier things have happened in college hockey.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. but, Tony, as always, we go from the ECAC and we go to our favorite WCHA, which I think we kind of know who's the top dog here in the WCHA.
So, yes, they're definitely the best team in Minnesota State. But the interesting thing is, if I'm not mistaken, if my math is correct, I was not a math major. I was a communications major, had very little math classes required. Minnesota State needs a single point to win the conference. However, they play Bemidji State this weekend in Bemidji. A Bemidji sweep would mean the Beavers would win the title, if my math is correct.
Oh, wow.
But that means they have to sweep one of the best teams in the country,
which is incredibly difficult. Yeah, that's extremely difficult. So will that be one of the most interesting stories in college hockey? I think it might possibly be if Bemidji State pulls it off. And because Minnesota State's been playing outstanding hockey from day one this season. So they could pull off a sweep at the end of the season and come out of left field here and take the WCHA title from Minnesota State's hands when they've rightfully had it all season. That would be one hell of a story for college hockey.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And my understanding for their tiebreakers, head-to-head points, which, I mean, in that case, if they sweep them, that means they would have beaten them three times.
Yeah, I was going to say, I believe Bemidji and Minnesota State split earlier this season at Minnesota State. Another interesting game. I mean, Tony, so it was funny. You mentioned last week on the podcast, watch out for Bowling Green if they can make a run here. They got a sweep over Ferris State, and look at them. They're fourth in the conference. And Northern Michigan, did not play well Friday. I don't know how else to put it. Lost 6-1 against Lake Superior. I think I texted you when I had my iPad. I chimed in on the first and second period of this game on my iPad, and I almost was kind of my jaw kind of dropped. Going, is Northern Michigan out there? Are they playing? What the hell's going on? It was kind of baffling to see, you know, how dominant Lake Superior looked on Friday night against a Northern Michigan team that's been very good all season. And, you know, you kind of called it. Now look at Alaska, Bowling Green are tied for fourth and only 4 points back from Northern, who's in the third spot. And watch out, Michigan Tech, who played a spoiler kind of early this season, Northern, in a weekend series where they got a split, has got to play Michigan Tech now this weekend again. I mean, I'm not saying Northern's walking out with I know it's home for Northern Michigan, but Michigan Tech did get a split early this season. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you get two rivals, and I mean, that's the thing that I look at Alaska against Anchorage too as another one where it's, yeah, on paper, Northern and Alaska. I mean, Northern and Tech are a little bit closer than Alaska and Anchorage are as far as like quality of the team they are. But shoot, I mean, anything can happen in those rivalry games. My understanding, though, is if Northern gets swept this weekend and then Bowling Green and Alaska sweep, like my guess would be that they would, Northern could fall from 3-6.
Wow. That would be just a gut punch for Northern Michigan going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Gut punch.
But at the same time, I almost, a lot of it with the seeding is I don't want to go to Alaska. if Alaska gets a home series, that's a tough one to have to go out there and win.
Yeah, and if you're Bowling Green, you're kind of looking your chops going, oh, we got Huntsville at Huntsville right now. Huntsville's got two wins in the conference. I'm going to guess they have maybe five wins total this season. I would have to look. So if you're Bowling Green, you're sitting in a great spot right now going, all right, we're going to get two wins here in Huntsville, hopefully. And, you know, if we need Michigan Tech on our side here, we're Michigan Tech fans this weekend if you're Bowling Green. Hoping to pull off the sweep against Northern, which would be another great story. And we would have two great stories here in the WCHA. Bemidji, if they could get a sweep, take over Minnesota State. And if, you know, can Northern all of a sudden drop three, four spots to the sixth spot and watch Bowling Green, Alaska, and Tech move their way up with wins and losses this week. I mean, this one weekend alone has got a lot of interesting potential storylines here.
Yeah, and you know, I think I could be wrong on it. I might have missed something. But Alaska, if they sweep, a six-point weekend, I believe, will get them guaranteed fourth. I think it drops down to, like, the – fourth tiebreaker between Alaska and Bowling Green.
Gotcha. So we're going to definitely keep our eye on the WCHA. I mean, there's a lot of – this weekend alone, I mean, Minnesota State and Bemidji is definitely the game of the week for the WCHA for so many reasons. But, you know, don't sleep on these Tech Northern, Anchorage, Alaska – and BG, I'm not even saying don't, you know, BG Huntsville, just because if BG for some god unknown reason cannot go to sweep in Huntsville, that's going to be very shocking. And then you'll see Alaska potentially move up on them for the four spot here. So there's a lot of interesting things here, but the two games that you want to keep your eye on, Minnesota State Bemidji this weekend, and you're watching Tech and Northern to see if Northern can hang on and hold off for the three spot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the one I mean, obviously Minnesota State, Bemidji State, I would say is one of the top three series this weekend. Let's see if NCAA's Twitter gets that right this weekend. But, I mean, yeah, it's one of the top three battles, but that Northern Tech one it's always fun. I mean, yeah, I'm a little biased being from up in the UP, but it's a yeah. Good rivalry.
Well, and let's just say this. I mean, ultimately, we'll say, I'm going to say the term loosely or use it loosely. The word experts or analysts would say, you know, if you're watching the Minnesota State Bemidji game, you're leaning towards that's going to be a split weekend. That's a hard series where you can confidently say Minnesota State sweeping Bemidji and vice versa. But Northern, who's got, I think, a lot more to – I mean, Bemidji and Minnesota are locked in the one or two. It's just who's going to be one and two. Northern right now is playing for a lot more. They're playing for third, or they're playing to not drop to six. I'm kind of with you that I would think the Tech-Northern game has a little bit more implications when it comes to playoffs than the Bemidji-Minnesota State game does right now.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would agree.
But, Tony, if that's all we got for WCHA, we're kind of moving along here. Like you mentioned, a lot of things are kind of getting set in stone. Let's move over to the Big Ten.
Yeah, the Big Ten is – it's still a very interesting conference, but I think we're getting a little bit more clarity as far as who's got a shot. Notre Dame had a really nice weekend. However, it wasn't enough given everything that else that's happened. Notre Dame, Michigan, and Michigan State are officially eliminated from the conference title in that number one seed. Right now, Penn State sits 4 points up on Ohio State and Minnesota. But Penn State's idle this weekend. They could easily drop down, you know, to third place or so. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Ohio State hosts Wisconsin this weekend. Well, Minnesota hosts Michigan. I'm really excited for that Minnesota Michigan series, as you have two teams who have been playing good hockey, despite Michigan slipping up a little again at Yost last weekend against Notre Dame, and then Notre Dame hosts Michigan State. But I mean, as far as seeding goes and everything, these games are going to be big for who you get in that first round matchup and whatnot.
Yeah, so I got to flip in between games this week. Penn State, Minnesota being on the Big Ten Network this past weekend. That was a fun game to watch. And Dave Starman, who I didn't even know did Big Ten games, was there on Saturday doing the game. And that series alone didn't disappoint. Penn State, man, Minnesota early on, had leads, I think, in both games, and Penn State rallied in both games. And, overtime on Friday, Penn State got the W. And then Saturday, Penn State, I think Minnesota was up 2-0, and Penn State rattled off three. I could be wrong. Maybe it was 2-1 and rattled off two. But either way, Penn State made a huge comeback late in the game when Minnesota was really in the driver's seat majority of that Saturday game. Both played outstanding. Both goaltenders stood on their heads. Goaltender LaFontaine for Minnesota played outstanding hockey. He really stood out for me in that whole series this weekend. But I'm looking at the standings here, Tony, and this is kind of how I thought the standings were going to be pretty much all year. Maybe you throw in Minnesota or Wisconsin had a, I would, anticipating a better season than they've had this year. But I mean, I kind of anticipated the Michigan and Michigan States to be towards the bottom, and I thought Penn State, Ohio State, and at least Notre Dame were going to be at the top. Minnesota was kind of my wild card here early in the season or before, for preseason. So I mean, it kind of shaped up surprisingly, kind of how I thought it was going to end up. But we're still not out of the woods here. Penn State's the only one that have finished their Big Ten season, regular season, with the remainder of the team still going. You mentioned Notre Dame, Michigan, though. Notre Dame got a much-needed sweep that they have been desperately needing for a while, and they got it off a hot Michigan team at Yost, too. So that was cards against Notre Dame going into that weekend, and they were able to pull it off, and they're sitting fourth right now in the conference, sitting 6 points back from Penn State. Minnesota, like I said, ended up getting not so much of a good weekend out of the Penn State series, but still in it. And Ohio State, who's kind of been back and forth, got a much needed sweep off a Michigan State team who, as of just lately, has been kind of struggling here. And then your beloved Wisconsin Badgers putting the hammer down on Arizona State this weekend.
They just dominated them. But hey, I do have some scenarios here.
I like
So
scenarios.
yeah, so again, my math could be incorrect on some of these and how I'm interpreting the tiebreakers. So bear with me. Don't hold it against me if I'm wrong. Penn State wins the conference title if Ohio State and Minnesota each finish with 4 points or less as they hold the tiebreaker over both. While Notre Dame could tie Penn State does hold the tiebreak over them. They could slide as far as third place if both OSU and Minnesota earn five or more points this weekend. Ohio State's the team to really look at this weekend as they are the one that plays the lesser opponent in Wisconsin. They hold their own fate as they have the tiebreaker over Minnesota. 5 points to guarantee that they'll finish at worst in second, but could fall as far as fifth if they get swept by Wisconsin and other things happen this weekend. Minnesota does need a little bit of help from their border rivals. They need to finish with 5 or 6 points this weekend and then hope that OSU finishes with less points than them on the weekend to ensure first place. Notre Dame and Michigan are two teams that could finish as high as second, and Michigan State can do no better than third place.
Okay, well, so like you said, if Tony's math is accurate, and I assure you, I believe it is, there's a lot of different scenarios and outcomes that can happen in the Big Ten, which we're not shocked that the Big Ten's been a tight race all season long. And, like we've preached all year, Big Ten hockey has been fun to watch this entire season because there's not been a bad team here. I mean, we're even looking at you, Wisconsin. You guys aren't that bad of a team. You
No,
guys got a lot.
they
They got a
just
lot of good offense.
scored 13 goals against Arizona State this weekend.
And I want to say this. I had this written down. I can't find my note here, but I was gonna send this to you in a text. I want to say it was the Friday game. I'm gonna check this real quick because I want to point this out because it was Friday game. So, Tony, there was something that you and I had preached about Wisconsin early on this year. Do you remember what we used to say about Wisconsin with when it comes to if you knew if they were going to win the game or not?
Yeah, Cole Caulfield was scoring.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm glad you remember that, because when I looked at Friday's game, now Friday was the close game, 7-6 win. Cole Caulfield was held off the score sheet completely.
Oh, dang.
So that one was kind of surprising for me. I didn't get to watch that game, so I don't know if how active he was in the game, if Arizona State really was keying on him throughout the game, making it more difficult for him to score. Now, he did get on the score sheet a couple points on Saturday, so he did contribute this weekend or this past weekend. But I thought it was interesting because Arizona State's such a good team. And kept one of the most elite freshman players this season off the score sheet Friday in Wisconsin and getting the win. So Wisconsin did exactly what we've been – or exactly did the opposite of what we said all season. That's as long as Cole Caulfield is scoring, they're going to win.
Well, and I think Arizona State discovered the dog pound and their poutine there. Because they didn't not look too hot this
down.
Weekend.
slowed him down a little bit. Maybe, yeah, Johnny Walker slowed him down a little bit. But before we move on here, Tony, I mean, I want to say one thing that has kind of been a little bit disappointing, and that's just Michigan State. I don't know what's going on with them. I haven't gotten to watch the last couple weekends of their hockey games. But, man, oh, man, has Michigan State really – who has – really for like three quarters of the season been playing outstanding hockey, and just within the last maybe month and a half has really kind of nosedived here. A team that was contending, was at one point the number one team in the Big Ten, contending for the Big Ten number one spot for the first round bye, and now they're seeing themselves at the sixth spot right here. And like you said earlier, Michigan and Michigan State have officially kind of gotten themselves out of this race now.
Yeah, I mean, as Eminem said, snap back to reality, and that's exactly what's happened with the Michigan State Spartans. I mean, it's a team that I think was playing a lot better than, I mean, I guess you could say they're out kicking their coverage with the way they're playing, outperforming their expectations, and I think it's just kind of caught up to them. I mean, as you said, there's great hockey in the Big Ten, and I think it's probably the most. I don't even want to say probably. It is the most balanced conference out there. Where, I mean, I wouldn't even say there's one team in this conference that I look at as really a team that I'm like, ooh, I'd probably pick them to win a national championship. But there's so much balance in between everyone.
I agree. Before we move on here, Tony, real quick, of these, it's hard to pick a game of the week for the Big Ten in general, but we got three solid games here. Which one are you really keying on mostly here if you're watching Big Ten hockey this weekend?
I mean, I think the best series is probably going to be the Michigan-Minnesota as far as just, you know, the way the two teams are playing. But, I mean, I look at the same way with Michigan-Minnesota and Wisconsin-Ohio State just simply because of how big these games are.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm with you. Michigan-Minnesota is the game that I really would circle if I had to pick one of the three. When I look at all three, it's really kind of what I, you know, kind of envision is all three are pretty equal games. You know, the three home teams are the three top teams right now. Ohio, you know, I'm kind of excluding Penn State, obviously, because they're not playing this weekend. So we're just looking at the bottom six, right? So Ohio State, Notre Dame, Minnesota, boom, boom, boom. They're 2, 3, and 4. They're the home teams this weekend. And you got Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Michigan, who are 5, 6, and 7, who are really looking to kind of play spoiler on their end. And if you're Michigan, Michigan State, you're kind of just trying to see, you know, if you can get a sweep or get a win here and maybe try to flip-flop between 5 and 6 for the playoffs.
And, I mean, honestly, I think this one is showing with how good the top five teams are right now. I think this is a good example of you want to avoid that 4 or 5 seed.
Yes, I would agree 100%.
I'd much rather see it Michigan State or Wisconsin at this point in the first round.
And I want to check too. I would guess that all these games are going to be on the Big Ten Network. So let me double check here. Looks like Friday. Yes, for Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan, Minnesota. MSU and Notre Dame will be on the NBC Sports Network Friday. And Saturday looks like they're all going to be – I'm sorry, they're not all going to be on the Big Ten Network. They're all going to be on – looks like they're local, except for Wisconsin, Ohio State. They'll be on the Big Ten Network both days. So if you get an opportunity, Big Ten hockey this weekend, Friday and Saturday, all will be able to watch. And then, like I said, Saturday, two out of three games will be broadcast locally versus nationally. But so if you get a chance to watch Big Ten hockey, this is a great weekend to watch Big Ten hockey.
Oh, absolutely. Looks like I know what I'm doing Friday.
Tony, let's shift gears. Now we're down to our final, our two favorite conferences to talk about in college hockey. Let's talk Hockey East.
Yeah, so we're getting down to the two that, you know, it's a little bit unclear still with Hockey East, as shoot, we still have two more weeks of incredible action. And like I said, there's really no clarity, but BC right now is playing incredibly well. They're one of the hottest teams in the country. And I mean, especially coming off the bean pot where, I mean, I guess they didn't technically lose when it comes to the course of their record. They did get a sweep over Northeastern last weekend. UConn and Merrimack were the only other teams to pick up sweeps, which, I mean, UConn continues to roll. Missed opportunity for BU. Providence really missed an opportunity against Merrimack, one of the bottom teams in the conference. UMass did move it back into second place after they split with Lowell. And what's going on with Vermont right now, man? They haven't won yet, but they seem to be picking up a tie each week and preventing teams from picking up 4 points, as Maine only picked up 3 points, as right now they sit in third place. But it's really, really tight. Right now, New Hampshire would be the odd man out if we're looking at the conference tournament in a couple weekends. However, they have played two less games than Providence and sit 2 points back. So there definitely is ground to be made up. Really every matchup in Hockey East is big given how good these are. I'm really looking forward to BC BU on Saturday. That UMass UConn series should be pretty good. Lowell versus UNH will play this weekend. And then Maine Providence on Saturday could be a huge matchup.
Yeah. I was kind of shocked for Friday, you know, like I think this was the theme of Friday for me in college hockey, and that being the word shocked, because UConn shocked me all weekend, and I love, you know, you don't get me started on some UConn hockey, Tony, you know, this, I'm going to keep rolling with the Huskies here all season long. Getting an incredible sweep over a BU team, really kind of handled their business Saturday more than Friday. Friday was close, 4-3, but I was kind of shocked that UConn did pull off that. I don't know if Tony, would you classify that as an upset at this point in hockey? I don't know if I would.
I don't know.
It's tough, right? It's tough. But regardless, UConn.
I mean, yes.
UConn got an incredibly impressive sweep. Even one win this weekend against BU wouldn't be impressive for UConn. But this is I would have to say one of the best weekends that if you're a UConn hockey fan that you're ever going to witness, and that's you got a sweep over BU, a legendary program, and now you're sitting fourth in the conference. The one that really shocked me would be Merrimack over Providence. That one I think was very disappointing. If you're Providence, to lose to a team that's second to last in your conference, Providence, you have probably the two top offensive players in the country right now. Two will be considered for the Hobey Baker with North Dakota's Kawaguchi. And to not even put up a single point against a Merrimack team that's been very disappointing all seasons. If you're Providence, you cannot be happy about that. And you suffer really the consequences of that being in eighth place right now in the conference. Northeastern got absolutely dominated by BC 10-1. There's no good way to put that. But I think you kind of see, Tony, I mean, you know, they did play the night before. They played Thursday night. Northeastern lost 3-2, but remember they also lost John Madden's son, I should say, who's been one of their best players this season. Tyler, thank you. So you could see what effect happened Friday night when you lose one of your top players this season, and Boston College, like a shark in water, sniffed out the blood and absolutely lit them up 10-1. So it's unfortunate for Northeastern. You really hope Northeastern can kind of rebound from that. And lucky for them, they get a last place Vermont team this weekend. So that's can really help them up get, I think it's 4 points for a weekend, correct, in Hockey East?
That is correct, yes.
So you're looking for a 4-point weekend if you're Northeastern. But you just mentioned Vermont, who's winless in the conference, but somehow they got 4 points, so they got four ties, and they tied with Maine this past weekend, 0-0. Cannot believe there was a hockey game that had no points. I don't know if I've ever seen that. So that was very shocking on Saturday, and Vermont is probably laughing, going, "We got a point out of it." So. But Maine sitting at third in the conference from it somehow, some way. The weekend matchup last weekend, though, for me was the UMass and UMass Lowell that didn't disappoint. Both teams who are playing outstanding hockey this season. I think when we get to the pairwise with bracketology with Tringo a little bit later, we'll see that UMass Lowell right now, I think, is on the outside looking in, if I'm not mistaken, after this weekend. They've been kind of in and out of the pairwise, but UMass has been in it, the top 16, majority, if not all, the season. And a weekend that I think both Tony, you and I predicted was going to be a split weekend, ended up being a split. UMass Lowell got the better half 3-2 on Friday and 5-3 UMass on Saturday.
That if empty net goal. Did you see that empty net goal?
I did not see that empty net
goal. Oh, man. Look it up. It was the top play of the week in college hockey. Whew, it was impressive.
Oh, I will look that up, definitely. It's hard to pick, you know, Tony, this is like kind of like the Big Ten. This is a conference that's hard to pick one select series or a game for the game of the week. If I'm really looking at this, though, I mean, obviously you look at the rivalry, BCBU, that just historic rivalry that's going to be played on Saturday. That's definitely a game that you want to circle based on, you know, how the history of it. But if I'm picking one series, though, that I think is really, you know, the series to watch, I'm looking at UMass UConn. UConn is hot right now, sitting 4. UMass is number 2 right now. If you're a UConn fan, you're loving this right now. You're in a good spot right now where you can somehow jump to the number 2 spot this weekend, potentially, if you can get a sweep over UMass. A split would even benefit them. They'll get 1 point closer to UMass and maybe get the third spot. So if you're UConn, this is a big, big weekend for you. If you get a sweep, its dividends pay off tremendously. A split does you justice as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have to agree on that one. I mean, yeah, obviously BCBU with the rivalry's sake. But, I mean, there's not really a bad, with the exception of Northeastern Vermont, is one that Northeastern should get back on track and get 4 points. Other than that, it's all really, really good games this weekend. BC and Merrimack play tomorrow, which is Thursday. But other than that, fantastic hockey out east.
Yeah, and if there's another game that I really have, I'm looking at, it's Maine and Providence, both who couldn't score a single point last weekend. So let's see if they can. One of them can put up 1 point this weekend. Providence, who, like I said, they're not a bad team. Now, if you look at their conference record, they're 9-10-3. You'd be like, what the hell is he talking about? They're good. Yeah, they're actually they're good. don't let that record sell you on anything. And Maine is 3rd in the conference, but what, only 4 points separate them? So if you're Providence, you get Maine at home, unfortunately, I think, for one game this weekend.
Yep, on Saturday.
On Saturday, this is a big 2 points for Providence. And if you're Maine, you're just trying to hold off UConn and UMass Lowell from taking you from 3rd and dropping you to 5th, potentially 6th, depending on how BU does this weekend. So Games that have a lot of implications now, like we mentioned early on in the show, this is one of the conferences that does not end this weekend. So we do have more implications on potential games the following weekend as well that we'll cover next week. So, you know, we're not out of the woods yet with Hockey East as far as the regular season comes. But, you know, we'll see how this weekend plays out. Like you said, there's a lot of good games. I mean, outside of Northeastern Vermont, which you're hoping to God that Northeastern can get a sweep there. But you know, at least for me, game of the week, UMass UConn. And I would like to add, it's my favorite. It's a home and home series. Everybody on this podcast at this point should know that I'm a big fan and favorite of the home and home series in college hockey.
Which is really cool with Hockey East, because they do a lot of those.
Yeah, which it's why I love them. All right, Tony, last but not least, the very exciting NCHC, which we had a lot of interesting outcomes this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the top series of the weekend didn't disappoint, as Duluth and WMU split their weekend series with two really good games. The Bulldogs now sit 6 points up on WMU for second. Denver probably had the best weekend out of anyone as they swept Miami, but the biggest shocker was North Dakota only picking up a single point in their series against St. Cloud. St. Cloud's really been playing well recently. They picked up ground and sit only 5 points behind WMU for third place and only four behind Denver for fourth place, where Denver and St. Cloud will battle it out in St. Cloud this weekend. So big, big matchup there.
Yeah, there's Denver. You guys got a lucky one this past weekend. Miami did not put up much of a fight, and I've been kind of tooting Miami's horn the last couple of weeks that they've been playing good hockey, just can't finish the games. And they just didn't show up this weekend. Denver got a pretty easy sweep over Miami at home this past weekend, which really paid them dividends because Western, like you mentioned, if you got to watch the game on CBS Sports Network. They came out firing on all cylinders Friday. If you watch the series, Dave Starman mentioned early on Friday game, he kind of got worried. He thinks maybe they got a little too amped up Friday because Duluth went into the period. I think first period kind of outplaying Western a little bit there. Western, though, turned into another gear that I haven't seen in a while from a Western Michigan team under Andy Murray in quite some time, and really dominated the second and third period. I do want to note, though, I did watch the Saturday game because I was super intrigued to see how this series was going to end, and I kind of wish CBS Sports Network was going to do both games because this is how good this series was. And Western kind of beat themselves because Duluth scored 15 seconds into the Saturday game on a shorthanded breakaway, and didn't score ever again. The game-winning goal ended up being one of the most fluky goals I've seen in quite some time, with being a Duluth player off the sideboards there, just wristing a puck right at Bussey, going for a line change. Pussy patted it up in the air with his pad, and for some reason, Cam Lee thought to swat it out of the air and accidentally swatted that into his own net. So that's how the game ended. So that was fun to watch, see that happen. But like you mentioned, Tony, that series didn't disappoint. And, you know, Western Michigan's got a tough series coming up. You got to play not only the number one team in the conference, but the number I don't think they're the number one team anymore in the nation. I think they dropped after this past weekend, but they got to go to North Dakota this weekend. So that's tough. That's tough on any day to go play there, but especially this season. But if you're Western, you're kind of also happy it's the same weekend. The two teams that are behind you are facing off one another, being Denver and St. Cloud.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a nice spot for them to be in. And okay, I would almost rather see Denver beat St. Cloud just so that way, you know, going into next weekend, you kind of have that spot clinched, right?
Yeah, you have a top four. It's just, are you three or four? I agree. Yeah. And then because really the bottom four teams, whether it's – so, I mean, Western, what, swept St. Cloud, what, about 4 or 5 weeks ago? You know, Nebraska-Omaha swept Colorado College. They played, I believe it might have been a swept too. or sweep. And then you got Miami coming up. They didn't sweep them this a couple weeks ago and only got 5 out of 6 out of there. You're hoping for a sweep next weekend if you're Western Michigan. So, I mean, Western, if you're Western Michigan, you've played extremely well against the bottom four teams in the second half of the season. So it's just, who do you want? I think Western, Duluth, and North Dakota have locked home ice.
They have not.
They have not locked in.
So so North Dakota is the only team that has locked in home ice right now. Duluth, WMU, and Denver have not. But I would say Western and Duluth are pretty dang close. I believe if Duluth gets a single point in the rest of the year, they will clinch that spot.
Okay, so Western and Duluth are close to locking it in. Probably will depend on how they play this weekend, whether they lock it in or not. And then Denver, St. Cloud will be the interesting one. If St. Cloud gets a sweep over Denver, that kind of changes a lot, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, there's the very, I guess a very real possibility that we could be looking at St. Cloud State with 36, Western with 35, and Denver with 34 going into the final weekend of the season.
Which would be very interesting if that is the case, because then, you know, if you're Western, you're just trying to hang on to the four spot. If you're Denver, you're trying to get in the top four, and you're St. Cloud, you're holding on to three or four. So, really, I think the battle right there, I think we kind of alluded to that till last week's episode, the battle is between the 3, 4, and 5 spot in this conference, really.
Yeah, no, 100% at this point.
I think if Western got a sweep over Duluth last weekend, I think we would be talking about 2 through 5, but the fact that Duluth got the split, I think we're really looking at 3, 4, and 5 now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's mathematically possible that Duluth slides out of that second spot, but it's unlikely at this point.
Well, especially too, I mean, Duluth has a nice game here coming up against Colorado College, so not saying that Colorado College can't get a W here, but do I think it's likely? Not so much, even though it is home. So, I mean, Duluth they're sitting at a good driver spot right now to lock in their spot this weekend. Like we mentioned, Western's got a tough one this weekend, North Dakota, though they did play well against North Dakota earlier this season, and that was when they weren't healthy in week. You see the evidence when they are healthy. They play extremely well. I do want to note this. Dave Starman or Ben Holden did bring up an interesting fact that I don't think I've ever known this, Tony. I don't know if you've known this, but Andy Murray against defending national championship teams the following year, his record after this past weekend, I believe, goes to 5 or 6-3-2.
Damn.
So he does very well against the defending national champions the following season. So I thought that was an interesting tidbit I just wanted to share, because they did mention that on the Friday game. Other games that are going on in the conference here, like we mentioned, Denver at St. Cloud, that's probably the series that I'm looking forward to outside of Western and North Dakota. And then we have Nebraska-Omaha in Oxford this weekend at Miami.
Yeah.
So really, I think there's 2 out of 4 games that I'm keeping my eye on. Two that really, I mean, Nebraska-Omaha, Miami, they're fighting really for nothing. And Duluth, just like you said, needs a single point to clinch. So that's what we're looking for. They're looking for, which I think they'll easily get this weekend.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there.
I'd be shocked if Colorado College pulled a sweep off, but that would be that would be awesome to see. But all right, Tony, that kind of wraps up the conferences here. I think we need to talk implications here in scenarios with the pairwise. So I think it's bracketology time with Tringo.
Yeah, and I mean, right now there's still a lot of games to be played. A lot of things can happen. We see a lot of teams sitting on the bubble, and it'll be interesting to see how these play out. Right now, the number one seeds. So right now there's a 3-way tie between Boston College, Duluth, and Denver for 4th place. Boston College does get the tiebreaker. The one seeds would be North Dakota, Minnesota State, Cornell, BC. The 2 seeds would be Duluth, Denver, Penn State, and UMass. The 3 seeds would be Ohio State, Clarkson, Bemidji, Northeastern. And the four seeds would be Arizona State, Minnesota, Western, and AIC, or whoever would be the Atlantic champion at this point. So kind of breaking it down, looking at, you know, who's hosting, who has to be where. Penn State has to be in Allentown as they are the host in the Midwest region. Denver has to be out in Loveland as they are the host in the West region. So right now I have it broken down, and I mean, a lot can happen. I'm interested to see what the actual committee is going to do with these, because like I've said so many times, these regions are absolute bullshit. The fact that there's three Eastern regionals and then a Western one that is as far west as Denver is. But regardless, what I would have in Worcester is North Dakota, UMass, Ohio State, AIC. In Allentown would be Minnesota State, Penn State, Clarkson, Western Michigan. In Albany would be Cornell, Duluth, Northeastern, Minnesota. And then in Loveland would be BC, Denver, Bemidji, and Arizona State.
Yeah, I mean, however the top 16 ends up being, I think we're in agreement, Tony, that all 16 teams competing for the right for a national championship, they're all great teams. So whatever the matchups end up being, 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3 in each region, whichever region, you know, you're in, they're going to be good games to watch. And it'll just be ultimately, you know, because it's one and done, you know, it will be interesting to see, like we've seen in the past, you know, will we see the upsets like an AIC over whoever they end up playing in a number one seed? Or, you know, do we see, you know, a Clarkson, a Cornell, you know, teams that have been heavily favored all season make their run for a national championship? Is this the year finally we don't see the NCHC win a national championship this year? We'll find out. But the race for the top 16 does keep getting a lot more interesting. It would be crazy to see if UMass Lowell is that first team out after playing such a good season so far this year. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, 16 through, you know, 25, all teams that are very good. And you can make the argument, you know, that they could compete in the top 16. But unfortunately, in college hockey, you only get 16 spots. And so a lot of good teams get left out. And that's just unfortunate, but that's how the cookie crumbles, I guess.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I was thinking all week, and I've had this mindset for a while. I love that college hockey, the playoff, the tournament's so difficult to get into. But at some point I think it doesn't diminish the regular season, but it kind of, if you get enough like non top 16 teams winning their conference tournament, it's super unfortunate. And, you know, there's so much talent, there's so much parity across the country right now. I don't want to see them double the amount of teams that get in, because at that point over 50% of the field would get in. But I would love to see it get up to, you know, 20 teams get in, where that way, you know, okay, if you're the 4 and 5 seed in each region, you might have to play 3 games in a weekend to get to the Frozen Four. But I just think adding those extra 4, doesn't have to be more than that, maybe add up to 24, but just getting to 20 would make an incredible tournament.
Well, yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that. The reason I would like to see it get expanded as well, and I'm with you, I don't want to see it expand to 30, 32, because that's, like you said, that's so, at least as of today, that's half the college Division I teams that are playing hockey right now. But I would love to see it maybe to 18 to 20 teams, because like I said, you know, like I mentioned, like you just talked about, the teams that, you know, unfortunately have been playing extremely well this year to get left out, it's just unfortunate. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention, I did read this, or I believe it was yesterday, I found this scrolling, I believe, on Twitter. The article titled was NHL Bankrolls College Hockey Expansion as the Youth Game Explodes. I thought that was cool. I did read it in its entirety yesterday, and it really breaks down The expansions that are we're looking in, like the Tampa, Nashville, and Las Vegas area, especially when it comes to playoffs for regions. They're really intrigued to see if Vegas would host a region in the next in the coming years. But they really are intrigued to expand the college game out west. You know, in California, you know, we're already in Arizona. And trying to convert a lot more of these club teams into Division I teams. It looks like Illinois is going to be the next one in line, as far as the article alluded. And I think we all kind of knew this too. I mean, it's been a couple years, but I don't think it's really a rumor anymore. I think it's in the works. As far as I know, Illinois has been in progress for the last year or so, building a new hockey arena for the team because they're anticipating becoming a varsity team, a varsity hockey team. So, you know, the more teams that end up becoming varsity or Division One teams, right? So we're adding more teams to the mix. I think at some point, if you're the NCAA, you're looking at, well, hey, now we're up to 70 teams, but we haven't changed the playoff format. We're still at 16. It doesn't seem right. I think at that's the other thing that they need to take in. You know, into the equation here is that if we're going to continuously add more teams to the mix, at some point you got to start increasing the playoffs because it just wouldn't seem right to keep it at 16 and just add more teams that don't get to play in a postseason or continue their run, especially like when we're looking at like this year. Quinnipiac, who's sitting at 19 in the pairwise, would obviously be out right now unless they – you know, I think win their conference playoffs. Their record right now is 19-11-2. It's a really good record. So, I mean, Tony, so I'm with you. I mean, I would love to see it expanded to probably like, I think I'm with you. 20 max would be a good spot for them.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at right now what the field would be, Lowell, Notre Dame, Maine, and Quinnipiac would be added to that field. And you look at the teams that'd be on the bubble, Michigan, Providence, St. Cloud, Harvard, Northern, and Omaha, all teams that I'm going to be honest with you, don't necessarily right now deserve to be in the tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good teams, but it's not like the body of work, but at least it makes it interesting. And I look at it from the standpoint of, okay, if Michigan does go out and win the Big Ten tournament or like Northern goes out and wins it and they're not a team that would fall into that top, UConn goes out and wins it. They're not a team that would fall in that range, and that at least opens up some doors for some of these teams that, you know, a good team still has a shot at a national championship.
Yeah, and I mean, this is completely irrelevant. It just always kind of baffles me. I've never really understood why, and I'm not trying to downgrade here the USCHO by any means or USA Hockey. I just never understood what was the point of, okay, we got their rankings. If you watch them on national television, you know, the rankings are displayed on the scoreboard, you know, Western 19, Minnesota State might be number 2 this week. Cornell might be 4 or 3. I never understood that because ultimately it's the pairwise numbers that come into play here. But the point I'm making is the USCHO ranks the top 20 teams. Well, if the pairwise in the playoffs is only 16 teams, and it's been like that for a long time, why the hell do we care about 17, 18, 19, and 20? You know what I mean? It's like
the media needs something to talk about.
I mean, it's just like, it's funny. Like, you know, someone came or texted me the other day, like, hey, I saw Western's the number 19 team in the nation. And I'm like, oh, who cares? Yeah. I'm a Western alum. And I said, who cares? It doesn't matter. I said, what matters is where they
but
are.
But they're
the pairwise.
13 in the pairwise.
Exactly. So, and they're like, well, what does that mean? I said, it means that you look at one thing and I look at the correct thing. because also, I mean, it's true. I just don't understand, like, when it comes to, like, why isn't the pairwise number gets posted when you're watching these games? I don't know. I mean, it changes just as much as the USCHO and the USA Hockey rankings. It just kind of baffles me. There's 3 ranking systems in college hockey, but there's only one that matters, and that's what we're talking about right now, and that's the pairwise. So, well, I don't know, that's just me venting a little bit.
It's like how college football was, though, back in the BCS days, and I mean, I guess even now in the college football playoff days, I mean, that they have what, three different rankings they use, but at the end of the day, only one matters. And yeah, the pairwise is just so different because no other sport does it like hockey. And I really think hockey's got the best system out of anybody. And it's so cool to see where teams fluctuate based on, you know, oh, Western just beat Duluth, they jumped here. Oh, but Lowell just beat UMass, so Western dropped a spot. It's so fun to watch.
Well, and it evens the playing field out, right? Like, it's not like, you know, you just mentioned, I mean, football is really a good example. You know, the Power Five conferences have always overshadowed the remainder of college football, right? So these teams are obviously top 14 teams in the nation when it comes to the rankings. But there's never been a system where it evens it out, where you could say, oh, hold on, this Big Ten team was better than this one SEC team that was better than this Pac-12 team, or whatever it is. Where, like, I agree with you. I think hockey has it right. They have a system where, okay, well, Bemidji State just beat, you know, so-and-so. It wasn't that impressive. We kind of assumed they were going to win. We're going to keep them at their 11th spot. But hey, you know, look at Ohio State. They just beat Penn State. You know, we're going to move them up a couple spots here. That's a big week. I mean, you know, the pairwise, you know, factors in so much that it evens the playing field out. And when you get a true representation of, you know, the rankings here, now you can argue the fact, oh, hold on, you know, Quinnipiac has got a better record than, you know, who, you know, Northeastern. Why is Northeastern 12 and Quinnipiac's 19? You know, like I said, there's a lot that gets factored into this where it ultimately, whether you agree or disagree with it, it kind of levels the playing field out a little bit better than really any other sports in college.
Yeah, I mean, they use mathematical equations. I mean, how they get to the mathematical equations, I still haven't really sat down and figured it out exactly. I know a few things in there. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, it takes into consideration strength of schedule and who you've played and who you've beaten and all these kinds of things, which is great. But the thing I love is, and this is a knock I have on like college basketball and college football, where those preseason rankings actually mean something. I mean, not as much in basketball, but it's like a team like Florida might finish, because I was talking to someone the other day, and I know you don't like hearing that, Matt, as a Florida fan, but there's five programs in college football that every single year, and it probably happened in hockey too, every single year they could finish 3-9 the year before and they're going to be in the top 25. It's Michigan, it's Notre Dame, it's Florida, it's Texas, and it's USC. Doesn't matter.
Oh yeah. No, I agree.
But you know, the problem isn't in college hockey, is basically what I was getting at.
Yeah, no, I agree. You don't see that problem too much in college hockey. And really too, they don't glorify the preseason rankings as much in college hockey, which I think is kind of nice. I mean, I think something gets leaked out. I know John Butchergross on Twitter, he'll tweet out in the beginning of the season his preseason rankings, which, you know, I do take I do take into consideration, because John Butchergross is a great college hockey analyst and does extremely well calling the games when it comes to the playoff times. But it's not like football where it gets glorified and all of a sudden, you know, people start freaking out when they're like, oh, hold on, Alabama's number one again. Well, hold on. They lost two games and they're still in the top 10. What's going on here? You know, that doesn't happen, I don't think, in college hockey.
Nope, not nearly to the level. No.
No. And, you know, like you said, I think the pairwise is the correct system. You know, could it be tweaked? I don't know. I think every system at some point could be tweaked a little bit, but as far as like when you're comparing hockey, basketball, football, I don't even know what the hell they do in college baseball, in any other college sports. You know, I think hockey really does it right when it comes to, hey, here we got 60 teams here. They're all competing for these 16 spots in come March and April. This is the format for all of them to equally fight for those 16 spots.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what, so Thankfully, I don't think that's ever going to change in college hockey, and I hope it doesn't. You know, something. I never think I would ever say this, but something actually is done right in the NCAA.
Yeah, no kidding. It's the one right thing.
Yeah. but I digress. Tony, I think we've covered a lot in the scenarios and the pairwise here. As always, I think we like to switch over to women's hockey. What's new in women's hockey this past weekend?
So there's the three big conferences, the ECAC, Hockey East, and the WCHA, all wrapped up their regular seasons last weekend. Into conference tournament time, which is really exciting. The CHA, as we kind of talked about, has that, you know, you got to play three games. And I was so baffled by it when I said it the first time. And now I really think about it. It's like, well, that every other series is a three game series, right? So what's the difference there? But I digress. Starting out in the CHA, let's just jump right into it because that's the one that has games left. Mercyhurst has clinched a bye into the semis, while Robert Morris sits 4 points up on Syracuse as those two teams play this weekend. So a lot at stake in the CHA. This is going to be a one bid league. They're going to slide in as the eighth seed, in all likelihood playing either Cornell, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, probably in the first, or maybe Northeastern even in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But looking at the ECAC, Cornell right now is the top team in the country. They've been playing some really, really good hockey. Right now, this is looking like it's probably going to be a three bid league. Cornell is the number one seed. They'll take on St. Lawrence. Princeton is the number two seed. They'll take on Quinnipiac this week. Clarkson is the number three seed. They'll take on Colgate. And then Harvard is the four seed. They will take on Yale this weekend. All these are best of three series at the home team's facility. Next weekend, the conference championship will be at the host of whatever's the highest seed remaining, and that will go into the one game elimination and semifinals and finals. All the ECAC, Hockey East, and WCHA have the same exact setup. For Hockey East, Northeastern is the number one seed. They'll take on Vermont. BU is the number two seed. They'll take on Maine. Providence is the number three seed. They'll take on New Hampshire. And BC is the number four seed, taking on UConn. In the WCHA, wild finish to the weekend. Wisconsin ended up holding off Minnesota Duluth. They won on Friday. But Saturday, they found themselves down two goals under a minute remaining in the game. They managed to score two goals in the final minute to send the game to overtime, where Darryl Watts had an absolute highlight reel goal, where I thought it was probably the best play in college hockey this weekend, but was voted the number two play. She kind of got on a breakaway and not really on a breakaway. She's one-on-one with another player, and then just kind of flipped the puck over her stick and ended up beating the goalie short side high, and a great win for the Badgers to clinch the number one seed and a bye into the semifinals. Minnesota is the number two seed. They'll take on St. Cloud State. Ohio State is the three seed. They'll take on Minnesota State. And Duluth is the number four seed, taking on Bemidji. So a lot of great action this weekend coming up. And it's always fun when it's playoff time, do or die. And the unfortunate thing, though, is it is time to see a lot of careers starting to come to an end. I want to jump into the pairwise and the women as well. Right now, Cornell, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Northeastern would be the top four seeds. Ohio State, Princeton, and Clarkson would be the last three, along with the CHA champion. BU, Duluth, Harvard, and Quinnipiac are the four teams that, you know, are kind of on the bubble, and it'll be interesting to see what happens these next couple weeks for them.
Well, I'm just going to say that was a lot. but, you know, Tony, nothing's ever has been disappointing in women on the women's side of college hockey this season. Like you just mentioned, we've seen a lot of great teams play this season. And now we're coming down to the home stretch here, playoff time. And it's like you mentioned, we're going to see a lot of good careers come to an end, at least in the college rankings. So we're hoping that they go on to the professional level in some way or fashion and succeed here. this though, I don't want to really like go too far back here, but I was scrolling through the standings here. I think this is just incredible from any type of sport, not just women's hockey, not just hockey, but Cornell. I did not realize until now they haven't lost in regulation in conference, and they've only lost one game all year in regulation. I think that's incredible to play almost 30 games
in a good season conference.
In a very good conference. They have three ties all within the conference. That's impressive. Whether they win a championship or not, that's an extremely impressive season, like you just mentioned, and a very good conference, which I think might – I don't want to – I don't know. For me, I've overshadowed it. I don't know if that's the same for in general with the regular population. But, with the things that, like, the Wisconsins and the Minnesotas have done all season – I think we haven't talked too much in that regard that, you know, hey, Cornell, I mean, we've talked about Cornell being a top team. I don't think we've really mentioned the fact that they've only lost one game in regulation all year. So that's not something that we want to, keep under wraps there much longer. Even though Wisconsin, you know, they got their powerhouse line, Darryl Watts and so forth. Minnesota's playing great this year. Sacred Heart's having an outstanding season. Mercyhurst, maybe you might want to lend some players to the men's side. They could use your help. I think, too, it's really cool to see Cornell on the men's and women's side, both number one this week in the pairwise or in the rankings here. So I think that's really cool to see that. Cornell overall has got a really good thing going in both the men's and women's sides for hockey. And then Clarkson, too, men's and women's playing at an extremely high level as well in their conferences and in the nation. So a lot of good things happening. I just made the joke about Mercyhurst, but it's cool to see that, like, for instance, like a Harvard and Quinnipiac, they're playing pretty well this season as well. So it's not just the men's side. Yale, you might want to do the same. Maybe lend some players to your men's side too, because you guys are playing pretty well this season. And same with Hockey East. Look at UConn. They're fifth in the conference right now. I mean, they're 13-11 in the conference, but hey, that's a pretty good conference to be fifth in. Pretty decent season, and look at what the men's been doing this year. I mean, you don't usually classify UConn with hockey. I think we all could agree that's been a basketball school for many, many years, both men and women. So it's cool to see that UConn hockey, both on the men and women's side, has played at a high level this season.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, women's is another one where you wish that you could see it increased by, you know, four teams, make it up to 12 teams that get into the tournament, because as the sport continues to grow, as is the talent in college hockey. So,
yeah, I agree 100%. Now, Tony, I want to throw a question out to you. If Wisconsin women's loaned Darryl Watts, and I don't want to get the other names right, Abby Rock and Sophie Shirley to the men's squad with Cole Caulfield and the rest of them, do we think Wisconsin would be higher up in the Big Ten on the men's side?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That's what I figured you would say, and I agree with you. But
I'll tell you what, the attendance would be a lot higher. That's just if the women played there.
Yeah, that's no doubt whatsoever. But I joke, but, you know, if you're the men's, you're probably wishing that you had these three rock stars as a line to compete for the Big Ten championship. So,
well, it should be noted, I haven't seen Team Canada, but there were a few, and I'm right now running off of just memory. So Abby Rock was named to Team USA's the national team. So it was, I think her first name's Grace, but Zoll Winkle from Minnesota. She's one of the top players in the country. Kayla Barnes is back on defense. She was a member of the U.S. national team when they won the gold. And then Maddie Rooney's back on the team as well. So you've got four players right now that are going right from playing college hockey to playing in the world championships.
Oh, that's very cool. Definitely keep an eye on that, because that will be fun to watch. But Tony, I mean, if I do want to, before we kind of wrap up the this week's episode here, I do want to make a quick correction that I stated earlier about the expansion going to Vegas and Tampa Bay and stuff. That's not for regions. That's for Frozen Four play. So I just want to make that correction that they're looking to bids for Tampa Bay, Vegas, and I think there's a couple others are right now the front runners for future Frozen Four.
Tampa's hosted before.
Tampa has hosted. I agree. These are just bids. I don't know what years they're for, but they're right now front runner bids for future Frozen Four sites.
I can get behind that being a Frozen Four. I really can. I have such a massive problem with how the regionals are set up that. And I don't think it's it would be so difficult with, like, could you imagine a regional being at Lawson Arena with how small it is? and just some of the teams share venues. Like, I know with Wisconsin, they share the Kohl Center with the basketball team, and there's that realistic possibility that you might run into a situation where a regional is happening at the same time as a women's NCAA tournament game. So I guess there's some issues, but I just don't like that you see all these Western teams that are number one seeds having to go out east and playing, you know, Eastern teams and essentially being a de facto home game. I remember when Providence won a national championship a few years back. Well, they were, I think, the last team into the tournament, and what do you know? They get to play at home and sleep in their own bed every night in the regional final. I just do not think that's right.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, I will say this, though. I know you mentioned that you're leery about Vegas. Now, if Vegas ends up becoming a Frozen Four site, not a regional site,
I'm all for that.
I think that would be cool. I was just recently over there in October for a Vegas Knights game against Colorado. That arena is outstanding. So I think that would just be huge for college hockey. That is now when Vegas got a team, I was extremely leery, and I think you know that from just our time sitting at the bar and we would talk about it. I was not really thrilled that Vegas became the next team. I didn't think Vegas would ever be a hockey town. Let me tell you, for being in Vegas for what, 4 or 5 days it was in October, at the beginning of the season for hockey, that is 100% false, what I thought. That is definitely a hockey town. They love it. That arena, I think, would eat up, and those the fans in that area would eat up the Frozen Four. I think it would be good for college hockey. So if Vegas got the bid, I would not be disappointed with that. And I think it would really bode well for them to really expand out west to get more interest in college hockey. So, but we'll see how that plays out with the bids and who gets what. For me, you know, like you said, Tampa's hosted before. I really would like to see
Nashville. Would be incredible.
Nashville would be fun. I just don't want to see the same 4 or 5 cities host like we've kind of seen over. I mean, like you said, Tampa just hosted 3 years ago, I think it was, maybe 4, and now they're already in a bid for another one. So I mean, I would like to see
what's going on. I think 7 years at this point.
Oh, is it 7 years? Well, yeah. Shit, time flies. But you know what I mean, I would like to see more cities get involved in these bids, whether they're big time hockey cities or not. You know, just expanding the game. This is going to be one way to expand college hockey's name, right? Is to get into these cities where maybe there aren't strong college hockey ties right now at this point, but might have an NHL team. And I'm not trying to shit all over Tampa Bay. I'm just saying I would like to see more. You know, if we're gonna start expanding college hockey, let's start getting these Frozen Four bids in places that aren't so common. Maybe like San Jose or Anaheim, playing where the Ducks or the Sharks play at the Shark Tank. That would be cool. And stuff like that, you know, you just go somewhere that they haven't gone before and just keep it rotating would be nice. So you don't consistently get the same four, maybe five cities competing where they're just going up and down the East Coast, and then you throw in Detroit every once in a while, yeah. Or Chicago. So, I mean, that's just my take. And I think if Vegas gets it, that would be awesome. I think that's just one step closer for the Frozen Four to be in California somewhere, which I think would be a long time waiting because, if they could play at L.A., Anaheim, or San Jose, that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, and, honestly, I feel people show up to the Frozen Four. I know when I was looking for tickets when it was in Chicago, they're pricey and people want to go. And I think it's more of a destination where you look at the regionals. It's, I think you're looking more at the teams where I know, I would go to a Frozen Four just because.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just a hockey fan, you're just going cause you want to watch something that you've never seen before, that you don't know what's going on, or you've just never been able to, if you're out west, you just don't get to see college hockey live in front of you. So, if you get a Frozen Four out there by you, I'm with you. I'm one of those few that I would go regardless if, our beloved Broncos made it or not, or any other team that I'm rooting for. So I agree. I think that would be the case. And, if college hockey's smart, I think they are.
Don't give the NCAA that much credit.
I think that, going to places that they haven't been before would benefit them greatly in expanding the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, Tony, as we like to now wrap up as of the last couple of weeks, hockey movie of the week.
All right. I have one, but I'll let you go first.
Oh, shit, I'm going first. All right. I am going to I was thinking about this earlier today. I'm going to go with it's a documentary called Pond Hockey, The Game as Nature Intended. I found this documentary back in college as I was getting ready to go make my way back to Chicago and up to Wisconsin for a pond hockey tournament that we talked about early on this year.
I was going to ask if this was a documentary about the Dangleberries.
No, that's not. No, we don't have that one yet. But if you get a chance, this documentary was in 08. It kind of follows two, three main teams. I haven't watched it in a while, but I believe the tournament that they really focus on is out east, which is usually one of the bigger tournaments in pond hockey. But it also kind of highlights a lot of, the things that you see, like if you watch, NBC Sports, the NHL Network, what all these players talk about. And the fact is they all started the same way as anybody starts. And that's putting the skates on, grabbing your stick, covering yourself up with as many layers as possible. And you go to the nearest frozen pond in the wintertime and you go skate around and go play hockey. And it's really cool. They get a lot of different former players, Neil Broughton, Wayne Gretzky, a couple former Hobie Bakers, different college hockey players, all interview about where they started, what makes pond hockey so much better for the game than playing, peewee or anything like that. And then they also, they follow along in the actual pond hockey tournament. One of the smoothest pond hockey skaters I've ever seen was a former Yale college hockey player, I believe out of Minnesota. And I believe he was at one point one of the top players back in, I want to say, the early 90s. I forget his name, so I'm not going to even try to to misquote myself here. But the documentary is well put together. It's an awesome – so if you get a chance, it's an awesome movie to watch to kind of see it really, I think for me, Tony, I didn't play regular organized hockey. I always played pond hockey and inline hockey, just pickup games out in the street, out in the driveway, because I love the game. This is a movie that I think really kind of connects, the players that play professionally and the guys that don't play professionally, that just play for fun. It's that common bond. Because we all start the same way. We're all outside on a frozen pond, frozen lake somewhere playing hockey.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out.
All right. What do you got for us?
King's Ransom.
Ooh.
So King's Ransom, are you familiar with this one, Matt?
I am.
Yeah. So what King's Ransom is, it's a 30 for 30. I'm a huge 30 for 30 fan. I think they do such a wonderful job with all of their movies. But King's Ransom is basically just a story of how Wayne Gretzky got traded from the Oilers to the Kings. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it, but it is really, really well done. Awesome documentary to see how that all went down. And basically how the birth of, not really the birth, but really that first boom of hockey in California taking off. I know it really makes sense when you look at when that happened. And I remember WMU's team when we were there, how many of those guys were from California. So it's really helped that growth of the game. So it's a great movie.
Yeah, and it also highlights the many Jersey fires that were created in dumpsters in Edmonton.
If only Instagram had existed then.
Oh man, social media would have been all over that.
Oh my god,
Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat that. But no, I agree. I love the 30 for 30s. Especially the hockey ones, and yeah, King's Ransom, because that was such a profound moment in the hockey world at that time. The greatest player being traded from a team that I don't think anybody ever expected to happen after winning X amount of Stanley Cups, and this guy's off to the record, you know, the races for record. So, but yeah, I agree. Well put documentary that ESPN did, which ESPN has done a lot of, and I don't think any of them have really been disappointments. So very good choice, I would agree with.
Awesome.
All right, Tony, but if we got nothing else, we got a lot of good action coming up this weekend that we're all excited for. We're going to watch a lot of hockey conferences wrap up this weekend. As we get closer to the hockey conference playoff action with Hockey East and NCHC wrapping up the following weekends, which we will have all next week for everybody and our listeners out there. And as always, watch college hockey.
Class dismissed.